Let the spirit of the Kennedys
and the magic of the Disney brothers be with you always.
Blood and Business Legacy merch, available now.
Let's run faster,
work harder,
burn brighter
before we're gone.
Order your Blood and Business Legacy merch today. The ending of Kick's story is brutal. You know, whenever someone has a tragedy and then you kind of want to like romanticize their life to try to kind of make it less painful that they died. While Kick was alive, I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Like, that's so frustrating. And then she died, and then I kind of want to whitewash everything. It's weird to talk about her choices when she died in such a tragic way. Like, she didn't die from old age or from, you know, something random. She died because of a stupid decision by someone who she was hanging out with, you know, who people had warned her against.
But how does that change anything? What are you saying?
It makes me scared to talk about, like, I'm scared to blame her. Yeah.
But you're not going to say that's why she died.
That is why she died.
We need to talk about the Kennedy siblings. Episode 9. Welcome to Blood and Business.
I'm Bethany.
And I'm Cassie. Well, it was her being reckless with her life.
But that's and the, like, same for all of the Kennedys. Like, they all died because they were putting themselves out there.
Mm-hmm. But, like, one was for a noble cause and one was to have fun. And that's the awkward difference. There's a girl, Christy Howard, on TikTok. I love her. She is so entertaining. But she lost her sister, her only sister. And it has wrecked her emotionally and changed her entire life. And her sister was her best friend. She shared this quote that when you lose a parent, you lose the past. They knew you from the time you were born. They are the first people that you get to know, except for your siblings.
Yeah.
When you lose a child, you lose the future, all that was to come, all the hope, all the things that you looked forward to, they're gone. They're taken away from you.
Kind of moments, with your spouse as well.
Yeah, moments that you won't get. Yes, your spouse as well.
The future that you dreamed up.
The life that you were planning to have together, that you were working towards. But when you lose a sibling, you lose both the past and you also lose the future. The people that have been there with you the entire time you've been becoming the person that you are. Every memory, every experience, most of them are spent with those people. And you also lose the future because they're your age.
Mm-hmm.
They're not supposed to die before you. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to keep going on together as friends. They're supposed to be there for you and you're supposed to get to see their life. You lose both.
Mm-hmm. The series of tragically unfortunate events in the Kennedy curse thus far is unbelievable. And Jack is absolutely wrecked. I feel like this was the last straw and now he's at his all-time low.
Yeah. When we come back from our break, we're going to be on episode 10 and you get to see Jack's perspective of Kick's death, more so with just his timeline and what he was doing at the time and the effect that it had on him in himself, his relationship with life. And it is brutal. Jack loved his siblings, Joe Jr., Jack, Rosemary, and Kick, his best friends in the entire world. The people that he not only grew up with and know everything about him and know his experiences like nobody else will ever be able to know. They knew Rose when she was 27 years old. They knew Joe Sr. when he was 29. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, trying to become a millionaire.
Those younger siblings don't have those experiences. They weren't that Rat Pack in Brookline, Massachusetts, going around with their young mom who's just trying to figure everything out. Like, Bobby got a more set in stone Rose.
Polished.
Who decided what she wanted to be like.
Knew how to be a mom.
Kind of had separated herself from Joe Sr. more so. And Jack and Joe Jr. and Rosemary and Kick got this like a little more angsty, like up and down home life.
Emotional roller coaster, Rose. Yeah.
They're trying to figure out, how do we manage this? Okay, we've decided I'm going to go on a lot of trips. But we've also decided, when I'm on a trip, you're not going to tell me about home. And when you're on a trip, I'm not going to tell you about home. But they were figuring all that out when Joe Jr., Jack, Rosemary, and Kick were the only ones in the picture.
I think one of the reasons that Kick and Jack were also super close, because yes, they have the same personality. They were mischievous together, the ones willing to be a little bit rebellious, and they were all about fun.
I don't know if it gave them more shared experiences, but whenever you're both up for like having a good time and Rosemary is getting tutored by mom, or she's playing tennis with mom, and Joe Jr. is worried about being serious and studious
and has all these duties and responsibilities, plus he's trying to like parent the other kids.
Jack and Kick are left and they're like up for having a freaking good time. And so I feel like they're going to have a lot of random moments where they just went out barefoot.
So many core memories together. Yeah. So many inside jokes together that none of the other siblings were a part of.
They were just in the backyard together.
It's not that Jack loved Kick more than his other siblings. It's just that they had so much more in common. They were sort of not soulmates.
Kindred souls.
Yeah, kindred spirits. And when you see when he loses Joe Jr., that he attributes so much to Joe Jr. being his big brother. And
it has a huge impact on his personal identity.
Yes, who he is in this world. We named off all those quotes in that episode about how the only reason Jack was who he was mostly because of Joe Jr.
Which is crazy. As I feel like we give a lot of credit to the parents, but if you hear about it from Jack's mouth, the reason that he wanted to rise to the occasion was Joe Jr.
And Rosemary was the reason that JFK, the president, did so much.
And had compassion.
Was able to be that advocate during his presidency, which...
Yeah, I mean, Eunice said herself, and she would be the one to know that people don't give Rosemary the credit for shaping JFK's presidential term.
Yeah.
That, I mean, it really wouldn't have been about the things that it was about without the experience of being Rosemary's big brother.
But Kick was this other part of his childhood.
I think it was like the
comfort.
Yes,
the fun.
The good parts of it. Yeah. And now, not that Joe Jr. or Rosemary didn't have good parts. It was just a little bit heavier.
Yes, there was so much more pain and like roller coaster ride with. Well, because he compared himself so much to Joe Jr. I think there were just more negative experiences, negative feelings tied to Rosemary and Joe Jr. And not negative in like a bad way, but just more of a painful, heavy, serious way. It was like competing with Joe Jr. for Joe Sr.'s attention. So there was a little bit more tension in their relationship. And with Rosemary, there was responsibility, but there was attached. Also tension, because he had to compete for Rose's attention with Rosemary. And Rosemary got all of the one-on-one. And Rosemary was so close in age to Jack that Rose even says later on in life that she always felt guilty that maybe I didn't spend enough time with Jack as a kid, because Rosemary was born right after him. So when he's still a baby, Rosemary is born and she starts taking all of her attention.
So Joe Jr. got more time before Rosemary was born to get his mom's attention and nurturing. And then Kick afterwards
is a girl.
And I think that Rose might have known a little bit more of like what was going on, because Kick was so young when it was all happening that by the time she's like a toddler, it's a little bit more stable. I don't know why it is, but Rose points Jack out to be the one that got gypped, you know?
Yeah.
I think that from Rosemary's story, there were times where it said, once Rosemary was born, Jack and Joe Jr. were kind of just like shoved off to the nannies. And I think maybe because they were boys as well, she was like, they're freaking fine. They have each other.
Yeah.
I need to take care of Rosemary. She needs me the most. So there was a lack of emotional bonding with Rose from Jack. And I think maybe Joe Jr. had that established already.
I think also Joe Jr. was more confident and less insecure, like, or maybe sensitive. I think that Jack and Kick had this inner...
Yeah, that people say like that JFK was a lot more sensitive than people realize.
Yes, and they front very confident. But I think sometimes too, the people who front the most over the top confident and charismatic are the ones who are more insecure. And Joe Jr. was such a steady, confident, mature, and he also had more of the responsibility
and affirmation.
And affirmation from the from Joe Sr.
You're the eldest. You're amazing. You're the golden boy.
I'm putting all of my eggs in your basket.
Yeah, keep doing what you're doing. Jack is like, you're a broken wing little duck. You need help.
So anyways, because of that, there were some negative feelings and tension in Jack and Joe Jr.'s relationship and in Jack and Rosemary's relationship. But there was not any of that with Kit and Jack's relationship. So they were able to be completely like enmeshed because of that. There was nothing just kind of bonded. Separating them.
Yeah. And I think that that relationship required the least performance and the least burden from Jack. Like with Rosemary, he had to just like get over his feelings of jealousy that his mom was always hanging out with her and not me. I also am responsible because I want to protect her. She's my sister and she needs
protection.
Mm-hmm. And that is a burden, especially for a seven, I think. It's frustrating to not be able to just be free and just have fun. Like you've got to
loose.
Yeah. And obviously like the whole competition with Joe Jr. and not feeling as adequate. There was more required of him to have a relationship with Joe Jr. because he had to like step up to the plate. And Joe Jr. is not going to freaking slow down for anyone. If you're going to,
especially Jack,
if you're going to have a relationship with Joe Jr., you better freaking get on board. But with Kick, he could relax and just be himself and just let go.
And I think too, that's why Jack Lem and Kick were such good friends. And we've seen in Kick's story that Kick and Lem hung out without Jack all the time, wrote letters to each other all the time. So they had their own special relationship as well. And it was that just like playful, we are truly friends.
Yeah.
And can truly just have absolute enjoyment, fun. We just get each other. We don't have to try.
Which makes sense looking back to, I think it was in episode 2 where JFK is like visiting Kick at boarding school, and one of her friends said Kick was bond to Jack with a profundity that seemed insufficient to describe.
Describe, because it wasn't that they were just siblings. It was like they had a whole other level of
relationship. It was a deep connection.
It wasn't just that they were family.
They weren't just brother and sister. But in episode 2, Bethany's like, wait, why is Jack like spending all of his weekends in middle school and high school hanging out with his little sister? But it was like, it wasn't like that. It was his best friend. And it wasn't a like, oh, kid sister relationship. Kick, like we said, she could freaking hang. She was independent and she wanted to be out there having all of the fun. She walked into every room like she freaking belonged. Mm-hmm. It wasn't,
oh, I need to babysit
my little sister.
Yeah, I need to watch her when she's here, which it was that way with Rosemary more so.
Right. It probably felt more like Jack and Kick were the most equal because he felt Joe Jr. was above him. He felt Rosemary wasn't on his level. Eunice wasn't on his level. But him and Kick were like
neck and neck.
The most...
Compatible, almost.
The most compatible and at the most similar place in the family, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because Rosemary had this special title that she's the one that everyone needs to accommodate to, and everyone needs to make sure that Rosemary is you know, included and taken care of and seen. And Joe Jr., he could never not be seen. Joe Jr. and Rosemary have these titles, these roles in the family, and Kick and Jack are just kind of
specific roles.
Yeah. And Kick and Jack are kind of just thrown in there like, you guys are a couple of kids. Like
they're just like the monkey in the middle.
Yeah. So they bond over that lack of huge role identity
in the family. Yes. And that too, I think, is what allowed them to be a little bit more rebellious and messy growing up. Because
maybe it's part of
what wasn't all eyes on them.
Maybe it's part of what made them a seven.
Mm-hmm. It was that they were able to be rebellious. The weight of the family wasn't on either one of them.
Nor were the eyeballs, because there was a lack of something. Like with Rosemary, everyone's worried about her.
Uh-huh.
And kind of babied her. And Jack and Kick got babied, not at all.
Right. And they were the true middle children of the upper, like of the eldests, they were the middle children.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting too, because it ends up that Bobby and Jack, you're about to see this, but Bobby and Jack end up becoming the closest. And Bobby is the middle of the youngest.
You're right.
So
that's interesting.
Yeah. I don't know if there's something to that or not, but
Yeah, it's interesting with birth order. They say that like every 5 years, the birth order, quote unquote, roles kind of start over. So if there's like a...
I think it's every 5 years or every fifth child.
Okay.
It starts over.
But you really, really can see that birth order dynamic in the Kennedys where it like starts over kind of. Like yes. There's a first batch and then there's like a second batch.
Yes. Even though there's not a huge gap in...
But there's Rose just so many the of them. Joe Jr.'s not going to...
Joe Jr. is already a full-on adult by the time that Teddy's like a toddler.
His uncle.
Mm-hmm.
More so, Pat was the oldest of those, like, or and sometimes Eunice. Eunice kind of, like, bobs in between being the youngest of the oldest and the oldest of the youngest.
Yeah.
But then Pat was kind of a little bit more of the older one. But she, I don't know if she rose to the occasion with that.
Yeah, that, the middle right there is kind of confusing. Because I feel like when
Eunice
they were
played the oldest role there. Because she was always like, make sure Jack straightens his tie. Make sure he's not late for... She kind of had that...
Yeah, motherly, like maternal...
Making sure things were taken care of.
Uh-huh.
And maybe she played that pretty well for the youngest, even though she was viewed as a baby compared to...
Also, Joe Jr. did an exceptional job at...
Reaching down.
Yes.
Through all of the years.
Yeah.
But it definitely, like, Bobby is a middle kid.
Yeah, regardless of Eunice and Pat. Bobby is still the true middle.
Uh-huh. He doesn't act like a baby. Even mm-hmm. though he's, like, the third from the bottom, he's just a middle child.
Mm-hmm.
He's just barely older than Gene, but Gene and Teddy both feel a little bit more like a baby.
And I think, too, because they're different genders, it's like they both had a spot to be the baby.
Right.
Because... They separated the kids so much based on gender that Gene truly was the baby of all the girl pack, and Teddy was the baby
of the boys
and of the whole family. So all of that to say, when Kick dies, very unexpectedly, very tragically, when her and Jack still have such a close friendship relationship, it is a...
Devastating
reaction that was not there with Rosemary and with Joe Jr.
Because it was Kick's story and we were already on episode 3, minute 55. I didn't go into like all of what it meant for Jack or what he was like during this time. And we didn't go into how wrecked he was, but he was.
He was
distraught. I mean,
we learned in the main episode that he literally could not, he was supposed to be in charge of Kick's arrangements after she dies. And he could not,
he couldn't compose himself enough
to be on the phone with anyone talking about arrangements, and couldn't get on the plane to go to her funeral because he was such a wreck, such a mess that he, I mean, I'm just imagining him just going from being so exhausted, numb, to just shaking, bawling his eyes out.
I don't think he had an emotional reaction like that until his son Patrick died.
Like ever again.
Ever
again. I think those are the two instances. Yep. Yeah, I agree.
So he was in his 40s by that point. Think about Jackie in her Bouvier episodes when Jack dies and she's just like kind of walking around like she doesn't even know.
Not on this planet.
You walked off of a plane crash survivor. This could have never happened. How could this have happened? And he said, that's the shock, is when someone in the prime of their life, they're in their late 20s, and she was healthy. She was vibrant. She had obviously a zest for life. She was going too hard, but it wasn't like she's on her deathbed and he's been able to see this coming. This is out of the blue. I mean, you're truly, legitimately, biologically in shock.
You'll see next episode, but he is literally pacing around, like sort of disassociating from reality, asking Lem, how could this have happened? I don't understand what this even means. What's going on? And Jack is, what, 30 at this point?
Yeah, and it's a lot more confusion than Joe
like,
Jr.'s
death.
I
don't understand.
Right, because Joe Jr., I mean, he's first of all, he's your older brother, so there's at least a little microscopic amount of, I expect him to go before me.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you expected it at 86, there's still somewhere biologically you're like, okay, he was older than me.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, he was in war. There was some, at least just a few months of, okay, my brother is at risk every day.
And because that was so familiar for Jack, he had lost so many friends and classmates, and he was also serving. It wasn't this weird, I talked to her yesterday and now she's gone.
Right. He was like, that could happen for sure. Yes. Like, I see it happening, a little bit.
Sort of.
Kik was safe in his mind.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
That, like, would never...
She just got on a plane and it crashed because she was going to dinner. Like, what?
And what's also devastating about that is that because he was so distraught, he couldn't get on the plane. He never got to have that funeral. He never got to see her body. He never got to have that closure.
Mm-hmm. But I am excited after this break for you guys to see how Jack comes out of this and
what it does to how he lives his life. Like, he definitely changes his behavior and responds.
It's almost like Jackie again
to her death.
Jackie's personality change after her parents get a divorce, how she has to become like a different person in order to cope with that.
Mm-hmm.
You sort of see the same thing in Jack. And I think it's not just losing Kik. It was also losing Joe Jr. that he had to become a different person because he no longer had his other half.
Because he was exposed. He was alone. Think about having all these people around you and within a 5-year span, they are gone. And you are standing there in the spotlight on stage by yourself. There is nobody around you kind of cushioning your edges. Like, you are exposed.
Right. So he was required to change. Reality was changing around him and he had to do something in order to cope. And you just see a completely different person come out of this because A, he's been so emotionally affected by it and it does change his personality. But also because he now has to exist in a world without those people. And you're almost getting a glimpse of, Jack as the oldest. If Jack would have been the oldest. I'm really excited to get into that, JFK. It's funny because
that's JFK.
That is JFK. Who he becomes is JFK. Who he has been is Jack. I'm glad we have all of this as a foundation and you can understand his adult life so much better because we know his background and who his innate personality was before all the trauma. But it's also really exciting to see who he becomes.
It's like in the Bible when Simon became Peter and Abram became Abraham. Jack became JFK. He's like ready for his fully manifested calling. We talk about this in episode 10. I can't wait to get to those episodes and get on. But
truly the best is yet to come.
Yes, the sun is peeking over the horizon. It's going to be a brighter day. But it's known that Jack was social. Like, he went out and we've talked about it with the Inga stuff. He was surface level social, but he did not have a lot of other deep connections or intimate relationships other than his family and Lem. Mm-hmm. That was literally it. And that's why he went so long without getting married and all of that. But he didn't need that growing up because he had so many people at home
that were his best friends.
Right.
But he never moved on after he lost all of them. He moved on in his career and in who he needed to be for everyone else. But he never was able to open back up to new friends. Because
those spots were gone.
Yeah, the spots were reserved for the people he grew up with, his actual best friends. And you see him become close with Eunice and Bobby especially, but also Jean, Pat, and Teddy. Yeah. But
Eunice moves in with him. Bobby becomes his right-hand man.
Mm-hmm. Kind of who he was going to be for Joe Jr.
Yes, you're right.
Which is wild. But he would have had
so much fun with that.
So much more fun, I would think.
Yeah.
Because he would get all the fun perks, but not the actual responsibility. But yeah, I don't know. It's just his siblings did mean so much to him. And I can't even begin to think about what that would feel like.
I would feel like the freaking world's ending. And he did.
Another reason why he was so wrecked by Kik's death, even more so than Joe Jr.'s, it seems like, is because when Joe Jr. passes, Kik comes back to America because she had been living. She had just gotten married to Billy. And she comes back home and her and Jack, it's again like they're kids. They sort of, in order to heal, have to have that time to be childlike again and to invest in each other again. And they're reminiscing about their childhood and their memories with Joe Jr. And they write that.
Gosh, I didn't even think about this. But yeah, that's what you do when something tragic happens. You go home. Everybody comes back, no matter where you were, no matter how long it's been since you've talked. You bust out the family albums. You look at photos. You tell stories. And you revert back a little bit.
Yes, for sure. To your old dynamics, to the last time you needed to rely on those people. And I'm sure they're telling their younger siblings stories that the youngest siblings were not a part of with Joe Jr. as a kid. So Jack is at an ultimate dependence on Kick when Kick dies.
Yeah, the ultimate intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
Because Joe Jr. dies, they bond, and then she loses her husband. And
they bond again. At this point, okay, Rosemary's gone. Joe Jr.'s gone. Billy's gone. So they have all of that. They're literally like us against the world. We have to rely on each other. Lem is in there a little bit as well. But they are the last people left that they grew up with, that they truly have all of their memories with. And that makes the loss even more shocking, A, because also you just lose you lost your other two siblings. There's no freaking
way.
You're done. Yeah, you're done. There's no way. Odds are that I'm going to lose another one.
No way.
Like, no, that just doesn't happen. If I would, that would be the last thing on my mind. That, okay, well, at least I have, everyone else
it's
is
like,
here.
Okay,
we're
but
safe.
It's the last thing on your mind. And also it's like this paranoid anxiety. Whenever there's a string of traumatic things that happens, your body just is like on edge, just expecting all the bad things to happen. But logically, you're like, there's literally no way that it will be another sibling lost, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe I'm paranoid. Maybe bad things are going to happen. But to think that the same thing happens again? No. Nah.
Especially to the person who hadn't, like you said, was at the prime of their life, had no health issues, was not in risky areas, like wasn't freaking in the war.
Yeah.
There's no reason that she should have died. So it was extra shocking and also extra painful because he was so dependent on her at that point.
He's like, I don't know what's going to happen next, but whatever happens,
I've got
Kick. We can talk about it and we will be together and there will be more good times ahead because when me and Kick are together, we can't help but have fun. Mm-hmm. So I will always have good things, good experiences that I can look forward to because Kick.
Because even when our big brother just died and I had to become a war hero, when I come back home, me
we
and Kick
can
are
sit out on the lawn
and have a
and
laugh.
Share a bottle of tequila and we can and we will be able to laugh and get in trouble again
and disappear into our dynamic for a little while. It was like they were, I don't know, they were just such a safe place for each other. And
yeah, I mean, Kick. Jack is the only person that Kick told about Peter.
Mm-hmm.
When she felt like she couldn't talk to anyone about it, she could tell Jack. And she was right.
Oh my gosh. But it still does seem confusing and kind of unfair how we talk about Kick or how we view her versus Joe Sr. and Jack specifically. Because they also were constantly risking things and like rushing things. And
yeah. But I know exactly
why. Together.
With Kick, she's trying to figure out who she is and she's risking her life doing all these crazy things to have fun and to figure out who she is, you know? Jack and Joe Jr. and Bobby died risking their life to help others, to stand in the gap. Yes, I'm sure there was selfish motivations mixed in there. And there's a couple ways you can think about that where it's like, okay, it's very nihilistic, very Machiavellian. Everything is calculated and there is largely just a selfish
lack of moral cause.
Yeah, it's very Hunger Games, survival of the fittest. If nothing is wrong, then let the games begin. Mm-hmm. Like nothing is off limits. But you can also think there's probably not any act that you can dissect and not find something that would be for self-gain.
There's no selfless act.
Yeah, but that might be 5, 10, 20 percent of your motivation, and a large amount of it can be truly, I want to help someone. Mm-hmm. When you apply that to Joe Jr. and Jack and Kick, I feel like we can see those little nuances where the act looks the same, but there's that sliding scale from nihilism to a charitable act, you know? Okay, so specifically Joe Jr., he died pushing it way too far, but why was he pushing it? He's, yes, trying to be a hero, trying to compete with his brother, trying to be the best.
Well, I feel too, like, with Joe Jr. and with Bobby specifically, because both of them were more aware of the death threat than Jack was, obviously, because Bobby's following Jack.
Do we go ahead and spoil that? I think let's go ahead and open this up. We're going to look at Kathleen Kick's death. We're going to look at Joe Jr.'s death, Jack's death, JFK, and RFK, Bobby's death, which we haven't gotten to him yet, but he is a gem. And he is, his story is yet to come in the Kennedy story.
I love him.
But all four of them died pushing the line a little too far. I want to kind of apply that nihilism to charitable act sliding scale to each of their deaths. And I think that is where our harshness or grace.
And just warmth too. It's easier for us to just
feel,
like,
warmth towards them.
Yeah. And like appreciation, gratitude.
Right. Because Joe Jr. died fighting in World War II so that we could be free when we were born.
Yeah. And so all of the freaking Jews would stop being freaking mass murdered. Like, that's, of course there's gratitude there.
Yeah. And with JFK and Bobby, I truly, honestly believe that they were killed because of how they were taking down the race barriers in our country.
But I think too, with, because you were talking about Joe Jr. and how he pushed the limits a little too far. And I'm trying to analyze, okay, was that, yeah, to be a hero?
Because you can see that thread in there. You can see, okay, Jack just got a freaking newspaper article published about how he's this freaking war hero. He's incredible, amazing. And Joe Jr. is not used to sharing the spotlight, especially when it comes to being a hero, being the dutiful, responsible.
And there is that competition within him that
needs to be the best.
Yes.
But
if you're doing it solely so that you can get praise, you're going to want to freaking be there to accept the praise. And he knew there's a 50-50 shot, dude. I think in order for people to be so bold and brave, you have to be a little bit delusionally confident and believe that you can make a difference and believe that you matter.
And also believe that you don't really matter that much and that you're just a smaller part of a larger whole. Because if you're completely nihilistic, why in the world would you ever save another life?
Yeah, why would you ever risk your life for someone else?
You wouldn't. You just wouldn't. So I can see a thread of selfishness in there, but I think that that decision was largely based in wanting to help and wanting to be good and wanting to contribute. And so that's
why, I think
that
for him, it was worth it. Is this worth me risking my life? Yes. So there was a large part of Joe Jr. that thought he was going to die. And he thought it was worth it, that the cost was worth it. There was also probably, like Cassie said, 10 to 15% of him that thought, dude, but if I pull this out, that will be freaking epic.
Crazy. Because that was going to be one of the top three dangerous missions, if it was successful, in all of World War II.
But like, who doesn't think that about anything?
Yeah, that's the thing. But it's what percentage is it? Because we are human. We're likely not making all of our decisions just without even considering ourselves. But that does not mean that it's, that we're bad people, or that it is a just largely selfish thing, or that it's not good.
And then you look at Bobby, and he's the same way, because he also sort of knew, oh, people might be coming for me as well, because shot my brother for the same freaking thing.
Oh my gosh. I think both of them, Joe Jr. and Bobby, looked at the situation and thought, how can I walk away? How can I go home? I'm the best person for the job.
And so maybe even selfishly too, I have in my life made a lot of my most selfless decisions and things that, yeah, I was swallowing my pride or swallowing my desire for myself, but it was still a selfish motivation because
you
I
wanted to be good.
No, because I didn't want to live with the guilt. I knew that that would be too heavy of a weight. It's like the opposite, like the negative.
Okay, yeah.
Would have been too much to bear.
Wow.
Just knowing yourself and knowing, yeah, Joe Jr., if I go back home and I know my brother soldiers are still here, or I know someone else went on this trip instead of me and died.
And I was the best pilot. I had the best chance.
And I could have survived. I could have made it through. And that other person wasn't as good of a pilot. And so if they do end up dying, then I'm telling myself someone died for no reason or because of me. So it could have been that as well with Bobby too. And you know that it had to be largely selfless with Bobby as well, because he had freaking 11 kids at home, or 10 at the time, but 10 and a half.
And he and his wife had from surface level, we haven't gotten into the details yet, but from surface level, it seems like they had the most genuine best friend fun relationship, that they just enjoyed each other. And Bobby loved being a father, and he would have had so much fun. Like, he was sacrificing a lot of pleasure and enjoyment, not just being at home with his family.
Right. He literally says that was the best decision I ever made, was the day I married Ethel.
I'm going to cry.
Like, Jack didn't freaking say that. None of the rest of them said that about their spouses. Mm-mm. They were the ones who, yeah, like you said, had maybe Eunice had the best home life and the most personal sacrifice in that way. Jack was like, he found the most joy out of his career. Bobby, it was a tough decision.
He was a full family man.
Mm-hmm.
So you also look at what people are sacrificing as well. Kathleen didn't leave anything at home.
But it's so hard too, because we are such harsh judges on her. And if I think of a quote unquote normal person just like walking around, or
yeah, but she's a Kennedy.
Sibling, yeah, I know. It is different. And with great power, privilege and power comes great responsibility. And she
knew it. She said, mm-hmm. "One who has had my life does not go from El Morocco to the Stork Club."
Yeah. But I'm thinking, yeah, if she wasn't a Kennedy, if she was just an average person, her husband died in war, then I wouldn't expect them to go back out there and do amazing things with their life just years following that death.
But she had the network, the connections, the financial ability, the upbringing, the mentality, the confidence, the
support,
everything that she needed.
Yeah, it's true. And it is such a waste when you compare her life to Eunice, and if she would have been able to grow up and mature, and I mean, look at what freaking Eunice accomplished.
And the legacy that she left behind. The legacy.
That's what I'm saying. Look how much
her children are still, and her grandchildren are still carrying out what she started.
The fact that the Special Olympics exists, like, that benefits all of society, because it's not only benefiting the disability community, not only benefiting America, it's literally benefiting all of the world society, because it changes the way that people view people with disabilities.
I don't know if it was Life magazine. There was an article published that was literally crediting Eunice Kennedy Shriver as the first line of breaking down the stigma around disabilities and people with disabilities, that they are not less than.
Yeah, that's huge. And if we could have had two Eunices, I mean, think about how much better the world would be if Kathleen would have used her freaking life to serve military wives.
I think that what we need to do is have more grace for Kick and more respect for Eunice, and kind of put out a call. This is not to condemn Kick. This is to call you to think about it. Just kind of weigh all of this in your mind and think, what changes can I make to be more like Eunice and more like Bobby, and use what I've been given. It's not condemnation for Kick, you know?
Yeah.
And why is Kick everyone's favorite? No one knows Eunice's story. No one knows.
I know. What the crap is that about? But it's also hard,
because I just want to like paint the Kennedys in a different light. They're not just the Great Gatsby glamorous American. Like, I want to rewrite the story.
Yeah.
That's
bootlegging Hollywood family. It's also hard because First of all, you look at human examples, and with every human example, you have to eat the fish, spit out the bones. Mm-hmm. Not everything, not all the decisions that the Kennedys made were good decisions, even remotely. Like, they did a lot of hurtful things. But also, Kik isn't any less of a human or any, she didn't deserve to live any less than the rest of them because she didn't, her output wasn't as great. You know, like, there's a difference between, it's unfortunate that that's how you decided to spend your life and you died because of it, and Rose's freaking belief that God was righting wrongs.
We completely
disagree with that, even remotely. Because also, her life, her being her soul, is the same as everyone else's. Mm-hmm. Like, she learned waiting in the line for rations. To God, we are all the same.
I want to make sure that people don't think that we think Kik's life was less precious
or
the way that you live your life does not have any effect on the value of your life. We just like to talk about it because you can do more for other people while you are here on Earth. It's just an added benefit.
It's not just an added benefit. I think there is something inside of humans that get a type of satisfaction, a type of warm, fuzzy feeling, a type of love inside themselves and a confidence when you help other people. I don't think that living a purely selfish life is even beneficial to yourself.
No, she would have been happier.
Yes. So it's not just, but it doesn't, these things in, and I think that people there would be less mental illness.
The path to freedom is not inward, it's outward.
Yes. There would be less insecurity. Mm-hmm. People would be less paralyzed.
Identity crisis
with eating disorders, with anything that has to do with like other people just so focused on you.
And what I'd like to say also is that we talk about this because we are on our own expedition to become
better people.
I wanted to touch on the whole Enneagram 7 thing again because I was so existential when I was like 17, 18, 19, 20 that Mac had to like teach me how to have fun.
Mac is her husband.
Yeah, Mac's my husband. He valued fun so much, and especially with what we've all gone through as a family in the past few years, we've realized how much fun is so crucial to surviving, to thriving, to having good relationships. And when you go through hard things, it's just even more heightened how much you need those positive experiences, because we are freaking people. We are not just
robot
slaves who can just do amazing things for other people and whatever. Like, fun is good. We are supposed to have pleasure
and find enjoyment in each other as well.
Right. And so that's what these Enneagram 7s really bring out and bring to the table. And that is so important as well. It's just having balance.
Yeah.
Because I'm sorry, but I could not live like Eunice Kennedy Shriver. Like,
but I think it was fun. That was fun to her. All of those camps, like, that would be
okay,
so
yeah,
fun for me.
But she took the time to just be and to just have fun.
Yes. And she allowed herself to be a part of it on the ground, like boots on the ground.
And have relationships.
Because she could have been the CEO and president and behind closed doors 24/7. And
carrying a clipboard around.
Yeah. And I think that is what made the people who were coming to Camp Shriver
come back.
Yes. Because they
and
were
tell
like,
their
oh,
friends.
She, Eunice Kennedy Shriver, knows me. She talked to me.
And
we hung out.
Being with her will bless you. Being in your presence or being in her presence is fun, and it makes me feel good about myself.
Yeah.
And if you can make someone walk away from an encounter with you and feel good about themselves, oh my gosh. And I think that Eunice did that for people. She's like, I built a whole playground for you. Go play. Go be with each other. You don't have to worry about if other people are looking at you, what you look like, what.
Yeah, just a childlike freedom.
Yeah, because I mean, I've had times in my life where I'm like, I feel like I can't laugh because my double chin. I feel like I can't laugh because my squinty eyes, you know?
It's
like,
so, so stupid that this is where we are.
But
it really is.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It's insane. But it's like those people who felt like, I can't be myself. I have to keep myself buttoned up. Rosemary, I have to hold my dad's arm and walk as still and slow as possible so that people don't see who I really am. And Eunice just blew that out of the water. And she's like, here's a playground. Go freaking be yourselves. Nobody's watching. Everyone is just here to be with each other and have full on fun all day long. I feel like we keep being like, fun, like it's a bad thing. And it's not. It's a life-giving thing.
Yeah, when, I don't think
in the right
that,
context.
Yeah. And I don't think that Jack would have ever become president if he was not allowed to have fun in his life. I'm afraid it's coming across like we want Kick to just conform to the family beliefs and traditions and the Catholic culture that she was raised in, that she just needed to stick by all of that. And we don't believe that at all. I don't think it's healthy for anyone or a good thing to just swallow everything.
Down.
Yeah, shove it down and become a shell of a person that just her duty is to her parents and to her family.
Not only do I think that that was definitely not the right way for Rose to live, at least that was like kind of something she put on herself and it was her decision. I definitely don't think that Kick should have lived her life in accordance to pleasing her mother's convictions. Like, I definitely do not think anyone should be living for their parents. No. Like, that
or
is...
Or their siblings
ridiculous.
Or...
Ridiculous. Anyone else.
Yeah. Once Kick started to realize, I don't want to live like my mom. I don't believe all the things that I was taught growing up by the nuns and by my mother.
Bethany and I both are like, okay... There's
she
no
truly
way.
Believed that her soul would be damned to hell forever if she married Billy. No one would do that. If someone truly, truly, truly thought, I am for sure sealing my fate, I am going to be in
eternally
hell
damned.
Yeah.
There's just no way. She just didn't
actually believe that.
Right. So be honest about that.
And then go search and find what you do believe.
Right.
About people, about yourself. She just... Instead was like, I'll just like keep this Band-Aid on this. I'll keep acting like I ish believe, but I'm also going to
completely disregard.
Like,
yeah,
she just
did.
She was just wasting
factor.
Her own time. Like, she was wasting her own life. Like,
it
halfway
wasn't
believing in like 10 different lifestyles.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, I don't think Catholicism was like really a factor in how she lived her life or her decisions. But it was something that she wanted to be a factor. But if she could have just been like, okay, I want faith, I want a relationship with God, but I don't feel like I have these convictions at all, instead of just settling for a fake faith.
What I want for Kick is what I want for everyone, is the ability and the time to really figure out who you are and what you believe and then live that out. I think that too many people are living out a lifestyle that they don't actually want, they don't actually believe in, that they're just like stuck in this mundane routine and they're just going with the flow. I think most people live like that. I don't think most people actually do the rocking chair test with their big decisions or with their small decisions.
Because it is scary. It is a huge risk to walk away from the only thing that you've ever known and the thing that everybody around you is saying is good. But it's also not good to live out something very shallowly. This is what I want to say. This is going to be a really hard, tough piece of advice to actually absorb and practice, but it will change your life. The only way out, the only way to freedom is through the obstacles. The piper will be paid and it will haunt you every freaking day of your life, whether it's trauma or it's something that you need to make a different decision on, but you're just not addressing, whether it's
a gut feeling.
Yeah, a gut feeling, a relationship that has something like underlying in it that would be painful to talk about, but you're just kind of putting it in the corner of the room and pretending it doesn't exist. It has an effect on your relationships. It has an effect on you, your mental health, your physical health. Like, the body keeps the score. You are carrying it around and there is no way around it. There's no way to drop it and move on. The only way to get past it is to go through it. You have to open it up, look at it, be honest, dissect it. And I think it's like Ulysses S. Grant or something said, there are always more wolves until you count them. And once he was like literally in Texas, like going through the wilderness, and he thought there was like a pack of 20 wolves, and his mentor was like, we'll be fine. I promise. Let's just go on. And they came upon the pack of wolves and there was two wolves. It wasn't even a pack.
Most of the time I think that we don't even realize what we're actually afraid of until we start dissecting it.
Yeah.
That's like half the reason why therapy is good, because it just...
it gives you the time to just actually...
sit there and process and talk about, that's how I feel. I didn't even realize that's what I was carrying around.
And I think that in times of my life, I want to deny reality or pretend like things aren't the way that they are because I don't want them to be that way.
And sometimes it just doesn't feel just or right. Like, that shouldn't be affecting me, so I'm just going to act like it's not. But, or that's not my baggage to carry around. Like, I shouldn't be grieving over that, or I shouldn't be bothered by that. Well, you are. Reality is, you are.
That is the thing. It is so, 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 so hard to accept. But once you accept it, that is everything, because regardless of how you feel about it, it is reality. And you can't do anything about it until you actually look at the real situation.
Step one of AA, admit you have a problem.
And then that gives you all the power in the world, because then you can do something about it. So whatever you're kind of carrying around right now in your life, or whatever's in the back of your mind that you kind of are just trying to ignore, this is just a call to courage. It is worth it.
Yeah, and you're worth it.
The thing with Kik is that it felt so, so daunting and overwhelming for her to ever even question her faith and Catholicism because of how her mother viewed it and talked about it. I can't imagine how scary it would have been to admit to Rose Kennedy that you didn't agree with everything that the Catholic Church said. I don't think that there would have been a lot of grace there initially, but I think that Rose Kennedy eventually would have been able to have grace and calm down and have like nuance. And it would have been scary at first, but it's just so hard.
But I think too, Rose is the one who taught her to ignore issues in a way and just don't talk about it. So maybe, I don't know what that is, a wood freaking pecker or what? Gosh, it's like dripping sound or what is it?
No, it was like either a hammering or a woodpecker. Hang on.
I think it's super hard for most kids to confront their parents, especially if you're not a confrontational person. Plus, Rose was the one teaching Kik to ignore things and not address the elephant in the room.
And it would have been scary. She would have had a reaction. Like, yes. It would have been hard.
And even see when Kik tried to confront things and be open and honest with her parents, they reacted horribly.
But here's the thing. Here's the piper will be paid. It sucks that your mom is like that. It sucks that this is the situation that you're in, but it is the reality. And it was no less hard for her the way that she chose to try to like avoid it and try to, you know,
yeah, it wasn't
dance around the situation. It wasn't. The only way onward is through it.
I think that the same was true for Lee Bouvier, that, yeah, it would have been super painful and a huge mountain to climb addressing how she felt about her sister and how she felt like she was being treated by her sister, confronting her mom about everything, confronting herself with what she was sad about and grieve her childhood and just go through all of the processing of the trauma and reality. But at least then there's a light at the end of the tunnel. You can get through it, and then
there's at least the possibility for improvement.
Yeah. Like, we know for sure the way that she lived was more painful and less fun and
less fulfilling. I think, honestly, I really do think that Janet and Jackie would have adapted. Like, they have an attitude and they have pretentious, snobby noses, you know?
Uh-huh.
But I think that they would have accepted Lee however she wanted to be. The risks are there-ish, but the risks is, like, how much worse can you, like, really, really good, because at the end of her life, she didn't even have her mom or her sister
And she was spent her whole life feeling like a disappointment and sad.
Yeah. And she had to run away to like Louisiana or whatever with that director, that movie director dude, and couldn't even really be there for her mom or for her sister at the end of her mom's life, and didn't have a relationship with her sister whenever she died hardly at all. They had a surface level Christmas and we need to make sure our kids are friends relationship. And the reward for addressing their issues could have been so freaking great. They could have been freaking best friends again. They had the personalities to be able to be best friends. They yes. knew they could be best friends. Yes.
Agreed. That brings up a good point that I don't think that we've made when we've been talking about boundaries. But I think that the first step before creating boundaries is having a conversation. I think sometimes all it takes is someone initiating a conversation and acknowledging the hurt and what you've gone through with that other person. You just don't even know what you're working with or mm-hmm. what the other person wants until you ask, and the initial confrontation and conversation is
that's the scariest.
So scary, uh-huh. but it's so crucial because just creating boundaries on your end without even assessing the reality of your relationship and what the other person thinks, I think can be very detrimental as well because...
Well, and the anxiety of having that conversation is much less harmful than the avoidance and the lack of connection to the humans in your life that mean a lot to you.
Yeah. And if you do care about those relationships that you're creating boundaries with, because if it's a boundary or if it's someone who you don't really care to have a relationship with, you know that they aren't healthy for me and I can't have them in my life to a certain capacity, then yeah, maybe don't have the conversation, especially if there's abuse involved or they are just not a necessary part of your life. Even sometimes friendships, I'm like, okay, just they were good for a season.
Yep.
And you can go ahead and move on and you don't need to ask permission or have a conversation.
I also want to say that there's definitely relationships or there's definitely going to be people who you go to them and you're like, I don't want to talk about this with you anymore.
Or
I don't
really
feel safe.
Hurt by this.
They're going to be like, you're ridiculous. I don't freaking subscribe at all. They're not going to give
I don't think
an
I did
inch.
Anything wrong.
There are going to be things that you just can't do anything about. And that is horrible. Again. But again, that already is the reality. And you ignoring it isn't
yeah, at least
changing
then
that.
Then you know.
This relationship isn't what I thought it was or can't be what I would love it to
what
be.
What I want it to be.
So what can I actually get out of this relationship? Well, not what can I get out of it, but how can I craft this relationship to actually be healthy for me or for my family or for that other person? But I think the large majority is going to be less scary than that. It's going to be,
especially
okay, we've
in the
cooled
long
down.
Run. It has been really comforting for me in the past with having to create boundaries for my own mental health that certain boundaries are only there for a season and you don't need
oh, yeah.
those boundaries permanently. There can be times where you are more unstable and fragile mentally, physically, emotionally, and you have to create harsher boundaries in order to protect yourself because when we have really, really poor, fragile mental health, just from a certain season and you need to heal a little bit. You're like a burn victim with all these burns on the outside of your body. And anytime anyone does anything sort of toxic or unhealthy, it's super painful. But you are going to be in a season, if you allow yourself time to heal, where you can take more, where you have thicker skin, you have scars now, and when people breathe on you, it doesn't burn. And then you can reintroduce some of those people who are a little less gentle back into your life if it's a family member or a friend who you really care about and for your sake you want them in your life. So that has always been, yeah, a comfort to me that, okay, I don't have to keep these boundaries. I don't have to not talk to this person forever, maybe just for a few months while mm-hmm. I heal up and then reassess the boundaries. Maybe those boundaries do still need to be there for you or for the other person, but giving yourself the freedom to change and shift in relationships has helped me a lot knowing that every decision I make isn't permanent.
Yeah.
They are flexible.
Mm-hmm. Talking about Kik is so, so difficult for me because she never got to grow up and kind of come into her own more and create a better, solid identity. But the fact is, I really wish she wouldn't have freaking been with Peter Fitzwilliam. I really wish Peter Fitzwilliam wouldn't have freaking forced the pilot to fly the plane when he knew it was super dangerous. I wish that they would have freaking slowed down and respected life.
Join us here next time to hear all about how Jack becomes JFK and an all too familiar character, Jackie Bouvier, enters the story.
Thank you all for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed it, please give us a review on Apple, rate us on Spotify, and share Blood and Business with a friend or a sibling. If you'd like to support the show, the best way is to become a patron of Blood and Business. You will get bonus content every month, including a monthly bonus episode, interactive main episodes, and behind-the-scenes footage.
To keep up with us day-to-day, you can follow us at Blood and Business on Instagram and TikTok. You can find the link for Instagram, TikTok, and Patreon in the show notes below. Thank you so much for the support, and we will see you back here next week for your regularly scheduled programming on
Blood and Business.
I wasn't listening to anything that you were saying. Okay, this is what I'm talking about, or this is what I'm talking like in my normal voice. Cassie, so I can freaking please focus today. And this is what I'm talking about. Well, you're being so annoying. I didn't get enough coffee or satisfying breakfast for this crap. This isn't going to be good for me. I'm like staring at you and you're just blinking over and over.